It's Thursday, September 6th, and you're listening to the Geek at Geek News Central show number 797, sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com. Our September special for all new and existing GoDaddy customers. You get up to 3 .coms at $5.99 each. Use promo code 599GEEK. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Folks, I got a great show lined up for you tonight. Got a lot to talk about. Things are pretty nuts here. We'll talk about that here in a few moments. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to Geek News Central, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Honolulu. Hey, everyone, welcome to the show. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran, and I want to welcome you here to Geek News Central. I've got a lot to share with you tonight. I tell you, it's been one of those evenings where I've been just crushed. Matter of fact, the whole week has been crushed, and part of it has been tonight. I got some of the gear in, finally, that we had back-ordered. I'll talk about that here in a few minutes. We're actually testing tonight, streaming on live stream for the very first time, along with doing our primary live recording on Amazon as well, using the Amazon Flash Media Server at live.geeknewscentral.com. But first and foremost, we want you to make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com and check out all the great content. Of course, if you get over to the website, and once you're there, getting signed up for the show is easy. All you got to do is subscribe, and you find a link there to an RSS feed or from a iTunes link. Zune as well is there. So those links are still good. You can, the Zune one is, you can still get the show over there at the Zune Marketplace, or whatever it's becoming. I haven't been told that that link is going dead. We'll have to talk to Rob about that this coming Saturday. But definitely check out all the great content. The writers and other content creators at Geek News Central have been busy. We've got a new edition of the Gadget Professor online, Gadget Professor number 72. He's talking about hands-free Livio car internet radio, talks about some Bluetooth apps, and the gadget, of course, we've got Robot Underpants as well. So we're expecting his stuff to go up. But all the shows at Geek News Central, we hope that you'll be subscribed. And if everything goes right, there'll be a Saturday morning tech. I've got a little bit of change of plans here. We'll talk about that here in just a few minutes. Of course, I want to give a warm welcome to everyone that's a longtime listeners of the show. Of course, anyone that's a viewer as well. Thanks for being part of the Ohana. And if you're new, you're immediately included in that group. You are officially part of our Ohana here, part of our family of listeners. So thanks for tuning in. And of course, if you don't check the show out live, you can watch us on the Tech Podcast channel, on the Roku, Boxy, Samsung Smart TV, the variety of different Google TV devices, which there's a number of them now. And of course, if you ever want to reach out to the show, it's real easy to do so via Twitter at Geek News. You can email me geeknews@gmail.com. And of course, our 24-hour hotline is available at 619-342-7365. As I said, it's been a crazy week here. I think it's been, if I'm going to say, it's been one of the craziest weeks I have had. And be honest with you, I can't remember how long it's been this nuts. It's just been like, it's like I've been working like 16, 17, 18 hours a day, and there has been no let up. And I don't see it letting up. And this weekend, I've got maybe a potential change of plans. But it's absolutely been insane, crazy busy. But one thing that isn't insane, and one thing that you can do to really save yourself a lot of money, is by supporting our sponsors. And of course, GoDaddy.com, a longtime sponsor here at Geek News Central. We've got some great deals for you this month. Got that special .com offer, $5.99. per year, up three domains, and details are on the website. But if you want more than three, don't worry. I've got some additional promo codes for you as well. All you got to do is go over to geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy to get those codes. And really, there's there a code there for every occasion. You can save 15% on orders $20 or more by using Geek5. Todd20 will save you 20% on a 1 year shared hosting account. Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. ComSale will get you $7.99.coms. ComSale3 will get you $8.49.com renewals. Geek will get you $5 off orders $30 or more. Central will get you $10 off orders $50 or more. Aloha will get you $20 off any $75 or more. So there's everything there for every occasion. And we definitely encourage you to check out all the codes again at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Geek News Central runs on GoDaddy servers. We have, I've got close to 200 domains. Matter of fact, a little over 200 domains that I have residing there. We use a variety of their different products and services. And really, it's a one-stop shop for getting online and doing anything, e-commerce, mailing list, anything you can possibly think of doing online, they've got it. And we definitely want you to give them a try and definitely check out GoDaddy. So thanks for GoDaddy for being a long time sponsor here at GNC. So let me talk just a little bit about this potential travel change. Got an opportunity that just popped, and passport is required. So I may, and I'm not going to spoil it until I'm not going to announce where I'm going. Maybe I'll announce when I get there if it actually happens. So I'm kind of in limbo right now. I'll probably know a little bit tomorrow. But if next Monday's show is not from Texas, we could be somewhere much more, I should have affirmed it, a lot more tropical. So we'll talk about that, or I will tell you as it's developing, probably via Twitter or something. But all up in the air, kind of a last minute type of thing. So I'm on pins and needles on which way this is going to go. I'll know midday tomorrow, of course, but probably won't leave. If I don't go to Texas, I'll probably be going to a secondary location. As I said, I'm going to share that with you later, after the weekend, probably, I would think. But anyway, if not, you'll see me next show or Saturday Morning Tech. I'm sure still will go on Saturday morning, 6 a.m. here, Honolulu time, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. So don't worry about be able to catch the show then. You'll be able to catch Saturday Morning Tech. And we're just getting ready to do the podcast awards, obviously, on October 1st. So basically is working with the team. We didn't quite get our announcement ready, but I'm going to share with you guys behind the scenes what we're going to do for the podcast awards this year. What we're going to be doing this year is we are going to have the actual awards ceremony at New Media Expo in Las Vegas. So we're going to be having the actual true award ceremony again. This is the first time we've had basically a banquet and everything in the last couple of years of the awards. Because in the last couple of years, we've done all the awards right here online. I've done a live broadcast. Matter of fact, last year we had like 15,000 people on the stream for the live awards ceremony. But we'll still do live and streamed, but we're going to do an actual full-blown deal in Vegas, and we've got some great things we're going to be able to offer the nominees. 220 nominees this year. We'll get some special offers from the folks at New Media. We'll talk about that in detail as we announce them, but it's from what we've kind of worked out with them, it's going to be fantastic. So looking forward to that. And actually, so what that means is the podcast awards ceremony will be first week of January, or second week of January, 6th or 7th, something like that. Yeah, so it'd be the first week. But we're going to continue to start opening nominations up on October 1st as we had planned originally. So, anyway, that's kind of the deal on podcast awards for the 8th annual, and we'll begin getting kicked off on October 1st. So I got a lot of stuff to talk to you guys tonight on the tech side, and we're going to get into that here in just a second. Again, if you have comments on tonight's show, just go ahead and drop me a line, geeknews@gmail.com. or on Twitter @GeekNews, that's the best way to do that. So let me go through my quick list here and see if I've missed anything. I don't think I have. And let's go ahead and get into the content tonight of what I've got in the stack for you. And boy, oh boy, obviously the big announcement for today, as things were being announced, was the Amazon announcements. And Amazon is, obviously come out with some very cool new tablets. And they're really going after a full segment of the folks at on a different price levels on what they can afford. So what they've announced is some new Kindle Fire HD, what they're calling their Kindle Fire HD family. And they've got a big press release up on the Amazon site. But a lot of the sites that were at the press release were covering it. But $199 now gets you a 7-inch tablet with a stunning HD display. And what they're quoting to be the fastest Wi-Fi out there, we'll see. Exclusive Dolby Audio. They're going to have some pretty good processors in it as well. Then the next level at $299 is going to get you all the same advanced technology on an 8.9-inch large screen with resolutions up to 1920 by 1200 with 254 PPI on the actual display, which is just incredible. Now, the big mystery on the price difference between the same tablet size and the next model up is basically if you go from $299 to $499 and it gets you the same 8.9-inch large screen, get you 32 gigs of storage plus ultra-fast 4G LTE. Now, here's the trick. They announced something pretty, I call it evolutionary, but I'm concerned as well because they've announced a $49.99 one-year data package. In other words, you pay $49.50 bucks essentially for a whole year of 4G LTE. And I'm thinking to myself, man, it's time to buy a couple of tablets and switch until I got into the details. And what they're going to do is you're limited to 250 megs per month. So you're going to have to be very judicious about the amount of amount of bandwidth you'd use when you're actually on the 4G LTE package. Now, they apparently have packaged this with a pretty powerful modem per se, because it will come in with like 10 different data signals. So they're going to, this thing is basically one size fits all for the entire world, and you'll be able to take this thing anywhere and use it. And I'm sure there'll be restrictions from one country to the next if you're leaving your home of residence. But and I don't know if they're going to come out with additional data plans on this or not, because 250 megs doesn't, you know, the average person's going to go through that pretty quick. My wife, who has her iPad and she uses it exclusively for almost all her data usage, I think she does about 2.5 gigs a month. And she doesn't stream no video or nothing, but it's email, web browsing, all that stuff. But, and again, that's when she's on the road a lot. So she uses it there and when she's in the house and so forth. But yeah, at 250 megs per month, that's not very much. So people burn through that pretty quick. So anyway, that's what they announced. Basically two different types of tablets, a 7 and an 8.9 inch, and $199 to $299, and then all the way up to $499. If you can get away with that Wi-Fi one, that $300 is not a a bad deal. The tablet is going to be ad subsidized, meaning that when you basically lock it, there's going to be an ad showing on the screen, which is kind of interesting. But the folks over at Android Central put together basically a comparison page that is showing really all the differences. Now, you guys at home or watching on the stream tonight will not really be able to see this real well. So I'll put this up in the show notes. And definitely, you want to check out all the show notes for the show at gncshownotes.com. That's where the show notes will be for all the detailed links. And of course, we'll have the video and stuff up on geeknewscentral.com. But, you know, they talk about the differences between like the Surface RT, the Nexus 7, the iPad, and then it breaks down the Kindle, and it shows all the details on the tablet and how they break out. So I'll have that link up for you to take a peek and maybe help you if you're deciding to jump in the tablet market, whether or not you want to, where you want to spend your hard-earned dollars at. Now, I'm kind of torn because, you know, the Nexus 7's out, and I had been contemplating whether I was going to buy that, and then, of course, these new Kindle announcements come out. So you've got the $199 and $249 price point for the Nexus 7, and you've got $199 or $299, depending on which size you get, for the Kindle Fire HD. So I guess I'm going to have to talk to my wife about it and see which way we're going to go. But believe it or not, that 8.9 to me sounds pretty sexy from a size standpoint. You can't beat the price on that if you go with just the Wi-Fi version at $299. So we'll see where this leads. And people raving about it. Lots of good discussions online. People were not at all poo-pooing the actual device. There was good reviews on the video quality and responsiveness of the device. It's got a pretty nice processor in it. You know, with the option of having 16 gigs or 32 gigs of storage and the that 250 PPI, you know, the 254 PPI pixel rating, along with the 1920 by 1200 actual max screen size with the OMAP 447 processor in it, pretty good deal. But we will see if this is going to end up being one of the best tablets out there this year. Time will tell on this. But, you know, they're throwing tablets out there as fast as we can basically review them at this point. But there is, as people said, there is a little bit of concern out there about, the price difference between the LTE version and the Wi-Fi version. So, you know, choose wisely and know that $50 a month only gets you 250 megs of storage. All right, Amazon, when they were making these announcements today, they did announce, basically showed some charts without any real data points on them. But this struck me pretty amazing. And this was over on TechCrunch. And actually, they credit The Verge for the actual taking the picture of the screen. And I'll bring this up for those of you that are on the video part. So what they show is physical book sales versus Kindle book sales. And if you look at this chart starts at 1996 and then goes across to 2012. And what they show is basically this steady climb of physical books sold via Amazon. And then starting in mid-2008, this near vertical line of the number of Kindle books sold. And it eclipsed the physical books sold in about midway through 2010. And if this is an accurate chart, if this truly is an accurate chart, that tells me that physical book sales are in big, big trouble. Now, I'll be the first to admit, I get on airplanes, and what do I see on airplanes? But I see folks that are, you know, on their devices. I see very few people actually reading physical books anymore. Once in a while, I do. And usually, you can kind of tell based on, I hate to say it this way, but the age of the person. Many times older people are reading a physical book, whereas the younger generation, I'd say 50 and under, are on a tablet of some sort. Very rarely do I see, the younger folks actually not using a device for reading. And it's just kind of my quick observation as I've been flying around the country for these past 5 or 6 years. But, the folks at Amazon, they're pretty excited about this. And you're going to be able to get them pretty soon, and those in the UK, you're going to have them available starting October 25th, and they're going to be coming in at £129, or is that pounds, or is that euros? Anyway, so probably 129 euros, I would think, based on the symbol they've got there. So, available here in the US real soon, real quick, and then, of course, October 25th in Europe. All right, let's go ahead and switch up topics here. Get off the Amazon announcement. We've got a couple of great articles that were written on GNC by our writers over there. You know, with the Democratic National Convention wrapping up today, and of course the one last week, I have been seeing all sorts of nastiness in Facebook, on Google Plus, just about everywhere has been, people must like losing friends or something, because you know, you say something nasty about another political opponent, it's automatically almost guaranteed that 50% of your social circle is going to not like it. But I think there's a new, basically it's an app out there. It's called Social Fixer. It takes the politics out of Facebook. And it basically removes anything that it finds on keywords that you set up. And it basically doesn't allows those to show up in your timeline, and you can kind of avoid the hate and discontent that's being raised on many of these sites. And someone had actually put a picture up on a Google Plus post, and I kind of just made a, not a political comment, but a kind of a cutesy comment, and got accused of being a troll. And I was like, I'm just making a comment. I'm not being nasty. I'm not being left, right, nothing. I'm just, you know, and the person blocked me. I was like, wow, okay. Thank you very much. And I guess I won't comment on any of your stuff anymore. So people are really, I mean, really, really sensitive. So it is kind of interesting what's happening in the space. And I'd kind of love to hear you guys' feedback on what you're seeing. And if you're already tired of the noise that's out there on the political front. Another article that was written by Andrew is on basically part two, talking about Kickstarter and Kickstarter accountability. And, you know, the question that has been raised is what happens when a Kickstarter fails? And they've, you know, basically they've made their amount of money, but the project never gets off the ground and they don't meet their objectives. Well, apparently they haven't had to cross that bridge yet, according to Kickstarter. And they've had a few minor shakeups here or there, but nothing big. But, you know, really makes you wonder what you should consider. Do you have to look at the reliability or credibility of the person before doing Kickstarter stuff? And I guess the way I kind of look at Kickstarter, I kind of consider it like going to Vegas and you're going to the craps table. And if you think something's cool and you throw up $100, it's just like throwing $100 down on the crap table and you're just hoping that, you know, you're going to roll a number and versus rolling a seven. And, so I like to play for a winner. I don't like to play for a loser. So, I'm going to go out there and contribute money. So far, every one of the Kickstarters I've been involved with, I've got what they say they're going to deliver. And it's pretty cool. But he does have some good points. And he's also bringing up a UK point of view, because that's where he lives, is that if folks in the UK may have some protection if they paid a failed project using a credit card, might be able to get some of your money back that way. So I don't know. You'll have to look into those terms of services, talk to your credit card company on whether you can get your money back or not. But also, too, is if someone partially delivers, how does that work out? And one follow-up post by KL on the Vizio. The write-up basically says one of the hardest problems that she was having was trying to play the media that was on the local network, and it goes into talking about basically how she accomplished that and the challenges that went around it. So I'll have those links up on the website, of course, at gncshownotes.com. Three articles from GNC that you probably already have hit, but for those of you that haven't been over lately, you definitely want to come over. And that's three of many that have been up on the website. Of course, you guys know that I was a cable cutter for about a year until the wife turned the cable back on, and we're actually close to being cable cutters again. It's actually this, my wife actually now is the one that's initiating the cable cutting. But a Fios TV executive said that cord cutting is growing and it's going to change the TV business. And I thought this was interesting because it comes from someone that is basically providing television service via Fios and basically is a cable provider. The questionnaire from GigaOM asked, he was interviewed by, the interview was done via the Tampa Tribune. And let me see if I can find this gal's name, or maybe it's a guy. Maitreya, M-A-I-T-R-E-Y-I. I'm sorry, Chris Shawama. That's totally destroyed that. Not unusual for me to destroy someone's name here on the show. Apologies. But the question was asked whether cord cutting is losing stream. The Fios rep said, no, that trend is not stopping. It's growing. The question is it growing enough for us? Meaning, is Verizon waiting for this market to change enough where they can start providing a la carte television channels to their viewers. This is an interesting response. The respondent was basically also said that is the migration to a la carte enough that we can go that route? It has a way more important impact just on them. It impacts how we negotiate TV contracts with studios. It's not something we can do overnight, but definitely something we've been looking at. So in other words, Verizon and their Fios offering is looking to, you know, basically get underneath the thumb of having to buy these big deals where if you, you know, ESPN, you got to buy 25 other channels with it. And, you know, same with HBO and all the other cable providers that bundle all these crap channels together, you know, to get one or two good ones. So time will tell on this, but I think it's just a matter of time. As more people cut the cord, they're going to be forced to change. And what's going to end up happening is the crap is just going to go away. Someone's making a comment in the chat room. You know, what do you expect for a 2 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast? It's late. No one's watching live streams right now. So, you know, me. LG's 84-inch 4K high-definition TV has basically been brought on sale in the U.S. next month for a whopping $19,999. So, You want a 4K high definition TV? You got 20 grand laying around? Well, you can go out and spend it because that, my God, who wants to spend that kind of money for a television? You know, it's a sure, it's 84 inch, it's beautiful, but 20 grand? Not on most of our budgets. If you're lucky enough to be able to afford something like this, knock yourself out. 3840 by 2160 or four times the resolution. Of most current HD TVs are out there. So I'm sure it will be beautiful, but for $20,000, I think it should serve me a drink every night as well. Hey, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Apple is developing a competitor to Pandora, and they're saying it could launch within a matter of months. So that's kind of interesting that Apple's engaged in talks with record labels to create a streaming service. The service will be ad-supported and will be accessible from Apple's wide array of hardware. There's even a hope that PC users may be able to catch some of the action. That's an interesting move by Apple. And I can't believe they would be ad-supported. Apple doesn't like to lose money. So maybe people pay a premium, though, to be on those... You know, if it's a default app that's right on the front page of or front of your devices, big advantage there. So I'm sure Pandora, Spotify, and so forth are probably a little bit nervous. The New York Times has also chimed in saying that they have some proof of this being put forth. What do you think about Apple getting into that biz? I guess they're in everything else, so it shouldn't come as a surprise. But if I was a Pandora boss, I would be a little bit nervous based on the market share of everything that's going on with all the iOS devices. Hey, if you happen to be a Windows Phone user, there is a PayPal app that's been released today for you. So, you know, we know that the Windows Phone marketplace has a long way to go in competing with the App Store, but this is nice that they've got this PayPal app that's out and available. I do have a story tonight, a little later on, that's going to talk about PayPal and some, well, some concerns. And enough concerns, it's got me concerned. I sent the article over to our finance officer, and it's basically dealing with business accounts and seeing large influxes of customers and PayPal having a tendency to lock people out on stuff. So I'll have this link up in a little bit, but we'll talk about it more when I get to it. But first and foremost, I want to talk about Chinese students basically being used as slave labor. They're getting paid, don't get me wrong here, but Chinese students are reportedly being required to quote-unquote intern at Foxconn, producing Apple's next iPhone. Over at thenextweb.com, it's being reported that the... Basically, these students are showing up to their colleges for college education and instead being shipped over to Foxconn for a 2-month internship. This is to compensate for a labor shortage ahead of the next generation iPhone. There's some students that are not happy about this, and they have been putting some stuff up online. The Shanghai Daily quoted a student with a username of MenQIQ84 saying that she and 200 of her classmates from the Huan Institute of Technology were taken to a Foxconn factory to work. She reportedly will be paid $244 per month for her work, although she'll have to pay for her food and her accommodations. That's the big scam on these places. You got to pay for your room and pay for your food, and probably by the time they get done, they have $100. Students from at least 5 other universities were saying the same thing and saying they were working 12 hours a day, according to this report, again, out of the Shanghai Daily. This gal wrote that the authorities had ordered the school to send students to assist Foxconn, but said the factory neither informed parents nor signed agreements with the students. One or two schools had canceled the internship programs with Foxconn after this type of media exposure and pressure from the public, she said, but her institute had no plans to do so and had even punished students who had tried to leave the factory. So that's a pretty, you know, you're going to go to school somewhere, and lo and behold, they send you over and you're basically building Apple products for $244 a month. You need to really think about that. So you break that down to what they're getting paid, and I think they're working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and I'm just using that as an estimate. So they're working, let's just say 60 hours a month. So they're getting about $1 an hour. And wow, $1 an hour. Let's say they just work 40 hours. You know, that's still a month. That's still, you know, $2 an hour. No, not even $2, $1.50. Yeah, $1.50 an hour if they're working 40 hours a month. So it's pretty sad wages, for sure. But according to this report, more than 1,500 students were sent there to basically build our upcoming iPhone 5s. Let's move on and talk about Twitter a little bit. If you want to buy some ads now on Twitter, they have this self-service feature. So I went over and I did some experiments with it. I wanted to see how much it would cost for a promoted tweet. Oh my goodness. Go over there with a very empty credit card because they are not cheap. I was blown away by the self-service advertising and how much it was really going to cost. I was just like, I get this for that? I am in the wrong business. They are getting incredible rates for their the tweets. And I was just going to buy a specific couple of specific keywords, and no thank you. It's going to have to get a whole lot cheaper, and that's why you see most of the big brands in there, because the little folks can't afford to buy ads on Twitter. They're just, it's insanely expensive, and wow, I was really shocked. I really was. But you know, just go ahead and check it out yourself. You can find where the links are. You can go over and play around, set up an account, and you'll be amazed. We've talked about Pogo Plug for a long, long time. And the folks over at Engadget have basically the folks at Engadget found out via a press release, which for some reason I didn't get. I usually get most of these from Pogo Plug. But Pogo Plug has added, maybe I deleted it, Pogo Plug adds Amazon Glacier Blazed cloud storage to the service, includes a device with the $29 and $99 family plan. So you guys know what Amazon Glacier is, right? That's basically a new service by Amazon where you put up media that you're not going to access only like once in a blue moon. Matter of fact, I think they only allow you to access it once or twice a month. And you get you have to wait like 2 or 3 hours for it to be made available. This is true cloud storage. It's basically up there hidden in an archive someplace. But Pogo Plug has added this to their features. And again, if you spend at least $49, you get a device to go along with the service. And you get up to 100 gigs of storage for $29 and a full terabyte for $99 a year. So it makes it just easy for you to use Glacier. This was a smart move by PogoPlug because most of you don't really have any idea on how to get your data from here to there, right? But the PogoPlug service really makes it easy to basically push it to Amazon's Glacier service. And so they're essentially, what they're doing is reselling the storage and just going to manage how much you are using. And it just probably makes it easy for you to put stuff up. Now, there is another option where you can get up to 5 user plans and have 5 terabytes of storage. And that's quite a bit for most people. And that's at $199 a year. So, but you think about 5 terabytes at $199 a year, you can buy a couple of hard drives and pay for those in a couple of years. But it all depends how much you're going to be adding. Storage is not going to be easier as we move forward. As much stuff as, you know, the bigger pictures we're shooting, you know, I'm seeing that here, shooting video and shooting lots of pictures and stuff of the family. You know, I've got this nice Canon camera so that, you know, I basically have it set on the highest resolution. So, you know, each of those images is 2 or 3 megs each. And, you know, that uses a lot of space over time. And I've actually taken for the show, the actual video recordings of this show, I used to save everything. But now I'm just saving one master HD copy of the show. And not even saving the raw, not even saving the, because when I do this, when I'm recording right now, what's going on is I'm basically recording at the full stream. So I'll end up with like a 50 gig file at the end of this show, which I get done crunching down to about 800 megs when the show's put up online. And so I don't save that big 50 gigabyte file. What I do is I save the small 800 meg file, and that is one that I actually keep it here for my archive. But, you know, we're approaching 800 shows, and that in itself is, you know, quite a bit of storage. The audio stuff is insequential, but the video stuff really uses up a lot of space. All right, let's talk a little bit more about what was going on with Vobo and Ustream. And this has gotten a little bit nasty. We know that Ustream's CEO had responded to the issues that were going on with the Hugo Awards and apologized. And the folks at Vobo had a very different view of the incident. Here's what their CEO had to say via email. Vobo was shocked when it learned of the Hugo Award incident for the first time in the media, as no contact was made by Ustream through Vobo's 24/7 customer support or through any other direct channel at any point during or after the webcast. He then went on to add, Vobo technology was not at the root of the problem. Our content identification system provides customers with accurate information. Each customer must decide for itself what it does with that information. So I'm sure, you know, what has happened here is that you guys know that Ustream had some trouble along with some other sites with some content from like these wrestling, the W, whatever they are, those big wrestling shows. And I don't know if they went to court and settled or how that all went down, but basically Ustream had to put some sort of content management system in so that when someone was basically streaming something of a copyrighted nature, that they'd have ability to take it down. Well, in this instance, obviously, the technology worked against Ustream, and by the simple fact that they, with permission, had played some video clips, and the system didn't know that they had the permission, basically shut the stream down. But, you know, the Ustream CEO had basically said, hey, we couldn't get the stream back up. It was like Vobo had locked them out. So looks to me like it's a little blame game going on. And the damage has already been done, but really, here's the crux. And we're going to talk about this more later, and I've talked about this the last 2 or 3 shows, and you guys are probably sick of it already, but there's an increasing number of video services that find it necessary to use these automated filters to protect themselves against lawsuits. And I guess while I'm on it, I'll talk about it. the president's wife, Michelle Obama, had spoke two nights ago. There was lots of people, lots of news organizations reporting on this, taking the video clip and basically putting it up on their news channels for their YouTube channels. Well, dozens of sites, and including the Democratic National Committee, their video was locked out for copyright violation because Fox, ABC, CBS, NBC, Reuters, API, all these other groups had put the same exact videos up, and each one claimed copyright, of course, on that content. And then when the DNC put their, and they're the ones that really own the copyright to it per se, the DNC's video was blocked, and people going to the DNC website when they tried to play the vice president's, Michelle's speech, it says, hey, this has been removed because of copyright violation. You know, what kind of, you know, whatever your politics is, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just, it's wrong. What they're doing here is these automated systems are broke. You know, these filters don't know anything about copyright exceptions. They don't know anything about fair use. And, you know, at this point, we can almost just almost laugh because it's gotten so bad. And, you know, takedown. We're all being takedown. You know, Jeffrey Powers ran into a problem, and I retweeted one of his tweets a couple of days ago. He bought a royalty-free, open source album on Amazon earlier in the year. And it basically, royalty-free, open source, you can replay it, you can use it in commercial purposes. All the licensing information was on there that was legal for him to use that a clip from that music in his one of his videos. And he did, and got slammed immediately by YouTube by a copyright violation. And turns out that the album that was being sold by Amazon as basically copyright-free, royalty-free, all these rules, all these things that basically says you can use the music, was in somebody's system showing, oh, no, there's a copyright on this and you can't do that. So he got hit with a violation. So it's, you know, it's not only on the music, I mean, on the videos, it's on the music as well. And, you know, it's pretty scary out there. And it continues to be a growing issue. So I've already beat on this drum a lot, beat this dead horse. So we'll move on, but, be careful what you're putting online, because YouTube and their automated bot will get you for sure. All right. Chromebook rentals by Google launched at $30 per month. Okay. They're cheap. Those Chromebooks are cheap, but Google's going to be renting them. Are they that desperate to move these Chromebooks that obviously aren't selling? You know, you can get the Chromebook for $599 a piece in a bulk purchase, and you know that's not a lot, but it's obvious that corporations are not going to the cloud as much as people would expect. And I don't blame them, because I know I have a Chromebook here and I use it, but it's not that robust. It's hard to save files and stuff. And if you're working completely in the cloud, you're good. But if you want to open a Word document or something like that, you're out of luck. But anyway, you can rent them as a business now. And that might be okay for an intern thing where they need to, you know, basically ramp a bunch of new employees up or something in a short time. But I can't imagine that being a good long-term solution. Hey, Microsoft have a little bit of fun, and they've got a website now that says Bring It On. Bing It On. B-I-N. Yep, Bing It On. A smart marketing ploy. They bought the website bingiton.com, and now when you go, and let me just go over here. Let's go over to Bing It On, and let's look at what happens. So I'm going to go Bing It On. We're going to bring up the website, and those of you who are watching can watch us here. So let's get ready to Bing It On, the side-by-side search, Bing versus Google. So I'm going to go ahead and do, let's think of what we can put in here. Geek, oops, yeah, we'll do Geek News Central and see what we get when we hit the search button. And does it actually do a side-by-side? All right, nothing is happening. Okay, did it just lock, oh, here we go. I wonder if Google has locked him out. Loading round one results. So it basically shows results on the left, results on the right. So I have to vote for the best results. I'm going to look at the results from Microsoft, and they have that. That's good. Got live. They've got, that's a little bit weird. I would say on this search, Google wins. So I'm going to say Google wins that. So now I'm going to try another one that we do all the time. I'm going to put in podcast community. And if on Google, blueberry.com is the first one, same as on the left. And the second entry on Google is Wikipedia. The next entry on Microsoft is Podomatic. The third is Podcast Pickle. I know Podcast Pickle is essentially pretty much down and no longer an active site. Boy, I tell you, this one here, I'm going to have to basically by the third or fourth result, I would kind of have to give this one to Microsoft. That one's close. And let's see here. Let me think about another one. So we'll do this one. Do PowerPress plugin. And obviously these are loaded results. And this definitely, Google wins this one. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know there, Microsoft, if you're the winner or not. I hope they take this information and go back and look at the results. Because I definitely think here that Google's still edging them out in many ways. And I think the way they lay it out is a little bit better. But anyway, fun to play with. BingItOn.com. Give it a try. Try your own results. Let me know who wins for your challenge. You can drop me an email here, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline, 619-342-7365. All right, let's talk about a potential patent here. You know, one of the things because I wrote about it in my book, maybe I'm the prior art on this. But an Apple patent is talking about syncing iPhone and car. And you're going, I've talked about this in the past. So let's be straight up here. I've talked about wanting the ability to be able to walk out of the house with my phone and basically get into my car and have my car take over. Not necessarily my device, but have the car take over. So the folks at Apple have written a patent on syncing between your phone and your car. And but they've been granted this new patent, which shows maybe trying to find a ways to sync iPhone with a vehicle. So I've talked about that here and actually wrote about that in my book back in 2005 that felt that this would be the way we would go in the future. So am I the one that gets the prior art win call on this one? If Apple tries to use this against anybody, I just might have to put up some of my old shows where I talked about this. You know, we've talked about this in the past. So, this may not fit exactly, but it's pretty doggone close to what I started talking about as early or maybe as early as 2004, 2005. So, we'll see. We'll see on this one for sure. But won't be too long. Maybe we'll have Apple in your vehicle. Beyond in your pocket. All right. Apparently, the Pirate Bay founder who was arrested in Cambodia was not arrested because of hacking. I mean, because of the Pirate Bay. He was arrested related to a tax hack. This is what he was arrested for. So sources have confirmed that he's being held at the Interior Minister's Counterterrorism Department in conjunction with alleged hacking of a Swedish IT company and the subsequent leak of thousands of tax numbers. So Cambodia said they are going to expel him. They haven't said if they're going to send him back to Sweden or not. So we'll see where this goes. But he's headed somewhere. Over at ElliottJStocks.com, I'm going to show you guys a headline here that is bold enough that you would stop and read it. And basically, the headline is Good Riddance PayPal. And it's this huge, huge font. And what this guy does is he is a writer and he puts out a journal and it's called the Codex magazine. And he's had some major trouble with PayPal. And actually, it's called Eight Faces. It's similar to what happened with Codex magazine. But Eight Faces is a periodical that he puts out, but people are paying for the periodical in advance. So he's gotten to a point where he's getting a pretty large amount of money coming in on each issue, like around 15 grand. And he started getting questions and calls by PayPal and the type of business he had and how he was working it and if people were prepaying, which I guess PayPal gets a little bit nervous about. He got to the point where the correspondence was going back enough that he decided, no, I'm going to get my money out of the account and into my bank account. And so he moved about $40,000 out of PayPal into his bank account. And sure enough, a few days later, PayPal said, hey, if you we're going to put a hold on your money. And they basically say you can't take it out only like 30, 40, 60 days later after it's put in. And you have to maintain a certain minimum amount of at least 15,000 pounds in. And so basically, this guy's screwed, and he says he's going to lose. He's going to move to a different service, but what's happened here is PayPal's going to lose about fees on about $40,000 a year. So we run a huge amount of business through PayPal and through our hosting services we have at Raw Voice and the variety of different other things that we run through there. So, you know, at any given time, I've got a number of, I've got a certain amount of money in that account. And it makes me a little nervous because we deliver on demand. The people pay for a product. It's just, there's no waiting. They get their service immediately. Maybe we're not at risk, but boy, oh boy, he is not happy. And he goes through his whole story of using PayPal. So if you're a business and you're using PayPal to collect any amount of money, you need to go read this article. Of course, this will be up in gncshownotes.com. I want you to check it out. And of course, please link to it. If you do, tell them where you heard about it. But lots of comments on this one. And this has been online. This particular article has been on for a couple of days and it's gotten a fair amount of traffic. So anyway, link will be up in the show notes for you to check out. All right, Orrin Tector judges approve the ebook pricing settlement, says it's in the public interest to stop price fixing. Judge Denise Coate wasted no time in approving the Department of Justice settlement with three book publishers in its anti-lawsuit over ebook pricing. So what's going on here is the settlement between HarperCollins, Simon & Schuster, and Hachette has basically been pushed forward. The terms of settlement are pretty straightforward. One, they must terminate their agency agreements with Apple within 7 days after entry of the proposed final judgment. They must terminate those contracts with ebook retailers that contain either a restriction on the ebook's retailer's ability to set the price or a price minimum, price MFN, whatever that means, as defined in the proposal's final judgment. And for at least 2 years, they may not agree to any new contract with an ebook retailer that restricts the retailer's discretion over ebook pricing. And for at least 5 years, they may not enter an agreement with an ebook retailer that includes a price MFN. So it must be minimum financial MFN. Minimum financial. Well, it doesn't make any sense with that. Someone's going to have to tell me what a price of MFN is. That's not a term I'm familiar with, but, so this is huge. And, but these companies are, and I think they have to pay a fine too, a pretty big one over this. But they got body slammed over this DOJ settlement. So we'll see where this goes. And there's other cases that are continuing, including Apple. So we'll see where these other cases go as well. Hey, over on Ogizmo, any of you have got a little bar? You know, I've got like a little mini bar. I don't have like this anything fancy, and it's not something you can stand around. It's a little counter space in my garage. But this is pretty cool. It's called the Inebriator. It's a robotic bartender that mixes drinks on command. So this is pretty cool. It's pre-programmed with 15 drink recipes. So you and your guest basically can and find something you'd like on the menu. 15, that doesn't make, that's not a lot of different combinations. But one thing I like about it, it's got an ice machine. Basically, you can put ice into it, and it also has a blender. So you wait till you see this thing. It doesn't have a blender. So it's just going to be ice that you put in, and then it pours it up. It's still cool. So it just makes straight up mixed drinks. I don't know who made this thing, but I'd love one. I really would. It's very, very cool. There's a video on it. You can watch the video, which I didn't have time to do, obviously. But just seeing this thing and how they've got it lit up makes me want to go, I'd like one of these. So anyway, have the link up in the show notes for you to check out. Another article over on Ogizmo. Ever put your finger up to your throat to see where you were at, how fast your heart was beating? Well, there's a new cardio application that measures heartbeat. No contact required. So this is kind of cool. It's no straps, nothing. It just uses slight change in your face's reflectivity to calculate how fast your heart is beating. So you just hold it up, point it at yourself, and it seems the iPhone's camera is sensitive enough to detect the change in color to your skin related to an increase in blood flow. I'd really have to, is it free? How much does this thing cost? It's a $5 app. Worth it to see if it really works. But just to hold it up and just point it at your face, it can tell what your heartbeat is. That's pretty spectacular. But if they're putting it on the market, it must work. Hey, Jeffrey, if you're listening, that'd be a good one to demo on your show, man. All right, remember that cheetah that was run like 18 miles per hour? Well, they've really cranked it up. This cheetah now, this mechanical cheetah, is now capable of running up to 28 miles per hour. So this is now the world's fastest non-human. Or it's a machine, it can achieve a peak speed of 28 miles per hour. So yes, it runs faster than a human. It's not the fastest thing non-human. That was stupid to say, but pretty cool. And but they've got a nice link for it. It won't be too long that these things are going to be wandering around our yards, chasing the birds off and maybe chasing us. Who knows? How long before they become self-aware? That's the true question to ask. All right. uTorrent has landed on Android phones. So now you've got another way to burn through your mobile data caps. BitTorrent has launched a beta version of its uTorrent client for Android. The software allows torrent downloads straight to your Android and should help BitTorrent grow its mobile user base. Are you really going to do this? What are you going to download? Movies? You know, to your phone? Does your phone have enough storage to handle the stuff you're going to download? I just think this is... Please, someone tell me what they're going to use this for. I don't get it, to be honest with you. I really don't. All right, those of you that... have ever heard of this thing called Homestruck, this webcomic called Homestruck? I'd love to hear from you, but I guess a lot of people are scratching their heads because a lot of people don't understand what Homestruck is. And essentially, what the write-up says, this is a book, webcomic, flash, animation, video game hybrid. And the guy has created a Kickstarter to basically make an adventure game. And on Tuesday, his fans helped him meet $700,000 goal within just one day. Now, you think about that kind of money to get to, well, actually, he got to $750,000 in just a day. That's a rabid fan base. So I know someone in this audience is a Homestruck fan, And if you are, please enlighten us. Call the voicemail hotline. Tell us about Homestuck and what makes it so cool and why people would donate that much money that quickly to this this meme. So 619-342-7365. Love to hear from you guys if anyone's a fan of Homestuck. You know, the police these days are really facing some challenges in prosecuting people because there's so many things that are affecting court cases because of digital evidence. So we've got a ruling here saying that looking at text messages without a warrant violates our Fourth Amendment's rights. This that was basically thrown out involved a 6-year-old boy who had stopped breathing and then later died. His mother had called the police to report that he was not breathing. And while the police were in the house, they picked up the mother's cell phone and noticed a written but unsent text to her boyfriend, which suggested foul play. She had sent in her text message, "What if I take him to the hospital? What do I say about, and what do I say? And those marks on his neck, OMG. So apparently there was other texts mentioned punching the kid. So this this led the police to start a murder investigation and leading to the arrest of the kid's mother, a boyfriend, and the court has now rejected much of the evidence because it was obtained in a manner that violated the Fourth Amendment. Even though the info was clearly useful for the case, the Rhode Island State Court didn't fall for the claim that it helps the police and said that there was, basically they tried to play it off that there wasn't any Fourth Amendment concerns. Now, I'm sure this is going to be appealed. This ruling will be appealed by the prosecution on this, and we'll see where this leads. But looking at text without a warrant, at least in this case, is been ruled by the court to violate the Fourth Amendment. Now, I'm sure all of us can feel sad for this this boy who has died from potential abuse, and you know, this is going to maybe hurt the case against this other individual. But I guess we all have to ask ourselves, are we willing to give up our Fourth Amendment rights of search and seizure, you know, when the police didn't follow the procedures correctly in getting a warrant to see that information, which they could have? So, you know, what do we do here? Do we want this, you know, obviously we want, don't want a child abuser to be on the street if he's caused the death of a child. But at the same point, the question we have to ask ourselves is, are we willing to sacrifice our Fourth Amendment rights for this child? And these, in this, obviously what's going to be a ruling, an additional ruling here. And, you know, it's a troubling, you know, on one hand, you want this guy to, you know, get his day in court. You know, we still are innocent until proven guilty in this country. And at least that's the way it's supposed to work. So, you know, the question is, are we willing to give up Fourth Amendment rights when it comes to our cell phones and looking at text messages? You know, I really don't understand why the police didn't get a search warrant. They had this boy here and they wanted to know why he died. And, you know, if the autopsy showed some sort of probable cause of foul play, then the police can subpoena and get all that information. Now, they may not have seen the one text message it was sent that didn't get sent, but at the same time, there may have been other information they would have been able to glean through that search warrant. Or they could have waited right there and got a search warrant. And I don't know. Love to hear you guys' thoughts on this, but it's troubling that this boy is dead. At the same time, it is troubling that we are seeing potential slippage of our Fourth Amendment rights. You know, it goes back to the Michigan State Police who are taking suspects' phones and basically cloning them when they have probable cause on some type of drug activity or some other type of illegal activity going on. But again, that is a function of the police officer to decide when he's going to clone somebody's phone, and that's been upheld in Michigan. So you know, they ask for your phone, they take it to their car. Next thing you know, he's 20 minutes later, he's back, but he's copied everything off it. A little bit unnerving. All right, AT&T promised to expand LTE to more U.S. markets. So, you know, they're still lagging, and it's advancing its LTE coverage. And we know that Verizon's turned up the heat on the company, and they claim to have 75% of the U.S. population with LTE. And AT&T has announced it plans to expand its 4G market into 48 new markets by the end of the year. And I didn't actually have this article up on what those markets were. But so they're promising more expansion and to be able to cover more more cities. And you, so we'll see where this goes. But I wish they would have put the list up. That made it a lot more easy to could have read through some of this. But I have the link up in the show notes on it. This was over on Slashdot. All right, next article up tonight. Whoops, what's going on here? What did I do? Dutch police. Oh, but check this out. Imagine them asking this to happen here in the U.S. Dutch police have asked 8,000 plus citizens to provide their DNA. And in an attempt to solve a rape and murder case of a 16-year-old girl, the Dutch police have asked 8,080 men to provide DNA. All of those people lived within 5 kilometers or less from the crime scene. And this cold case is the first large-scale attempt not to hunt the rapist and killer, but to locate his closer distant male relatives? I don't get this. So they're asking the 8,000 citizens to prove their DNA. And apparently this has happened a while ago. All these people live 5 kilometers or less from the crime scene at the time of the murder. The reopened cold case is the first large attempt not to hunt the rapist and killer, but to locate his close or distant male relatives. Okay. So they don't know who this person is, must be. But can you imagine in the United States them asking for 8,080 men to provide DNA? No one would show up. There's more to this story. I'll have this link up in the show notes. It's over at dutchnews.nl. But definitely the interesting slant here. They're not trying to find the person that did it, but a relative. There's got to be a lot more to this story. I'll have the link up in the show notes. All right, just yesterday, Apple released updates to fix Java vulnerabilities. But it seems that the patch doesn't actually target the recently discovered high-profile Java bug that's been the talk of the web here over the past couple of weeks. So be careful. Basically, those of you on Mountain Lion are still, a Lion and Mountain Lion are still susceptible being on a website. And the word on the street is that a lot of porn sites are getting this loaded up. So be careful where you're going on the net, okay? All right, for those of you that have a family member that may have autism, there's a rare hereditary form of autism that has been found to be potentially treatable with protein supplements. DNA sequencing of 6 children with autism has revealed a mutation in a gene that stops several essential amino acids from being depleted. And basically, in lab studies, mice lacking this particular gene developed neurological problems related to autism that reverse by dietary changes. So this was determined by a child neurologist out of the University of California, San Diego, who led the study. So this may represent the first treatable form of autism, and it has a specific form of autism that is linked to this this potential protein supplement treatment. So we will see where this goes. And that may give hope to some folks that have a children or a family member with autism. And I'm sure this will be in all the autism circles, but I have some friends that have a child or with autism, and it's tough. And I sent this link over to him today and said, hope this helps and gives you some hope. It's nice to see the scientists continue to move forward on this type of front and trying to find cures for some of these things that really are devastating. All right. You guys know we talk about Ford here a lot. Sexy article, but Ford has come out with a replacement for the Ford E-Series van. You know, the Econoline is almost dead, and long live the Transit. They've come out with the all-new European-style full-size van that will begin to replace the venerable E-Series in the United States next year. So this is a pretty slick vehicle built on a unibody chassis for improved fuel efficiency. It's going to come with three different roof heights. So if you're looking for a new cargo or passenger van, this is going to be the E-Series that we sold alongside the Transit through 2014 as production ramps up in Kansas City. So this a new version also called the Transit Connect is also on the way. So I've been driving some of Ford's little new vehicles like this and, of course, a new van. It's about time we got a little more stylish. Oh, my gosh, the Plain Jane Ford vans, those things are, wow, they're rough. You know, the JPL scientists are now living on Mars time, right? And it's quite the experience because their day shifts every day by about 40 minutes. And there's a good article over in the PasadenaSun.com website talking about how a whole family is living on Mars time with one of the scientists there and the challenges of it. And I'll have the link up in the show notes for you to check out. But imagine having to shift your day to the right every day by 39 minutes. It could get pretty crazy after a while. Hey, the Japanese drilling vessel has set a record by drilling more than 6,926 feet beneath the seafloor. The Japanese Agency for Marine Earth Science and Technology are pretty proud of their achievement. And this new record is not that far from the old record. But they're going down and collecting samples, and they're basically their goal with this is to see real close to be able to basically get samples, or get those deep samples in order to that's basically close to the Earth's mantle in order to learn more about the geology of the Earth and to understand microbes that live at such depths. So 6,926 feet. Just don't punch through. What happens when you go all the way through, go too deep? It could be bad, yeah? Hey, you know, when I fly into Austin and take the toll road out of Austin heading up towards Waco, there's a toll road there that last time I was on it, the speed was 80. And I was pretty stoked to be able to drive 80 on an expressway. It's actually a toll road there in Texas. But Texas is going to open up a new stretch of highway with the highest speed limit in the country, giving eager drivers a chance to roll down that highway at 85 miles per hour. It's a 41-mile toll road between Austin and San Antonio. It's a brand-new road that's going to open. So if you live in those neck of the woods, get ready to be able to do a quick trip to San Antonio at 85 miles an hour. Don't know what's going to cost you, but should be a lot of fun. Hey, over in Business Week, there's a write-up on Apple's favorite blogger and talks about how people are getting inside access to the Apple ecosystem, yet also on the other side of the fence, it talks about how Apple punishes sites, and there's a few popular tech sites that are still personal non grata with Apple, but anyway, link will be up in the show notes on that. You know, certain tech sites that capture iPhones. So good article on that. And then another article on business, Bloomberg Business Week talks about how Netflix is getting a little nervous about losing more of their inventory. And you know, having lost some to Amazon lately, especially the Epic deal that that Netflix lost to Amazon. So what are you guys seeing out there that are using these services? Are you seeing more on Amazon Prime now? Or are you seeing more on Netflix? You know, where are you getting the majority of your streaming movies and stuff? I'd love to hear from you on that and where you're actually getting most of your movies you're watching today. Good article over on the BBC talking about electricity being generated by the human body. And this is a pretty incredible article. Talking about different ways that they're experimenting with capturing energy from the human body and being able to charge stuff like pacemakers and create energy from different devices that people are having to wear, specifically with folks that have lost limbs and so forth. So pretty incredible stuff here. Link will be up in the show notes for you to check that out. the Chinese have announced that they're going to be launching 8 more satellites into space to monitor the ocean around the country. So these are all scientific satellites, of course, and they're all going to be very close to China. Ha, ha, ha. So anyway, scientists are questioning why the Chinese need so many satellites. Well, they have to, you know, make an excuse or a story one way or the other. So link is up on that, too. Hey, over in Ars Tech, Jimmy Wales threatens to encrypt the Wikipedia if the UK passes a snooping bill. Basically, they've joined to oppose a communication data bill that's proposed by the UK government. Civil rights group have raised alarms about provision that would require British ISPs to keep records of every website their customers visit for 12 months. That's already going on here in the U.S. So why aren't you encrypting it for the United States folks there, Jimmy Wales? But he says he's going to put it under SSL if this goes through in the UK. So they're already capturing our stuff and have it on file. A botnet master has gotten 30 months in prison for renting out infected PCs. A hacker who had a botnet of 72,000 computers has gotten 30 months in jail. Jason Chattel of Phoenix pled guilty in August to one count of attempting to cause damage to multiple computers. So getting 30, up to a total of 30 months in the slammer on this. So he's not, could have been worse, but that's how much time he's going to get. I don't know how much time he's already served, but this case has been going on since 2009. How many of you use SmugMug? Are many of you photographers out there that are actually putting up images on SmugMug? Well, SmugMug's raising the price due to cost of storage and everything else, and boy, the photographers are outraged. But there's a pretty good story by Thomas Hawk who talks about basically the profit sharing that goes on with SmugMug as compared to like Flickr and Getty. And I'm not a big fan of Getty Images at all because of some of the tactics they've used in the past. But the folks are just really ripping up SmugMug on their increase in price. But yet, you know, they're putting these huge databases of pictures up. And basically, the guy says, hey, it's a cost of doing business. So I don't know if any of you use SmugMug, but some reasonable thought on why they had to raise prices in this article. If you're using Windows 8 already, be aware that you may not have the latest flash updates and you may be at risk, especially if you're using Internet Explorer 10 or on any version of Windows 8, including the released manufacturing version. The built-in flash media player has got some huge bugs, so be careful out there if you're using that. I'll have that link up, obviously, at gncshownotes.com. All right, last couple articles here tonight. I've just got some stuff from Torrent Freak. I'm kind of sick and tired of talking about the RIAA, the MPAA, peer-to-peer stuff. So I'm going to have three links at the end of the show and notes tonight. They're going to talk about anti-piracy block lists of peer-to-peer, some stuff that's going on with the anti-piracy agencies doing IP tracking and some of the stuff that's been going on the three strikes stuff here in the United States as well. So I'll have all those linked up in the show notes. I'm going to let you guys go those if you want to. But I'm going to wrap the show up tonight at this point with those articles. Let me go ahead and get into the email real quick here that has come in for the show and get that knocked out for you before we completely wrap here. And we're long. And is my email going to load? Yes, it is. And today is the 6th, and the last show was what, on the 3rd? So what has come in since then? Let's see here. All right, computer, don't act slow. All right, here we go. We've got an email from Hank Van S, and he sent this to me via Google Plus. He says, starting today, you can interact tweets anywhere on the web through embedded timelines. So it talks about some new features that Twitter has brought to market. So thanks, Hank, for sending that over. Got an email here from Rochelle. He said, hey, I think it's Rossell. Excuse me, not Rochelle. Rossell. He says, hey, Todd, when Mac Windows coexist Appley. He's got a Wall Street Journal article here from me. They sent over via Flipboard. Thanks for that. Got another email here from Rossell talking about Chinese knockoff maker ready to sue over iPhone 5 design. Article on MacObserver.com. We'll have that link up. I got an email from Kenneth real short. He said, hey, Todd, I don't think this is the country our founding fathers envision. Censorship and lawsuit in response to the Apple stuff that's been going on. Got an email here from Jeff. He says, Todd, I love the last few bits in show 796. I've been listening on and off all day at work. Great stuff. He says, the financial crisis can/piggy bank idea is hilarious. I just wonder if a real survival kit may be even more necessary if we get hit with a super recession. He says, quick idea for you. With a word of a 7-inch iPad running around the rumor mill, I wonder if iPad point of sale systems might be a good topic. Here at Amber, we've got customers all over the world, including Hawaii, using iPads, iPods, and iPhones. But from the server's point of view, the iPod is too small and the iPad is too big to take orders at the table. The 7 is exactly what they've been looking for. I agree. A lot of people agree with that. Jeffrey Powers talked about that on our last Saturday Morning Tech as well. Got an email from Bruce, a longtime listener. He says, hey, Todd, on show 790, you were discussing leasing options on solar panels. He says, there's been a couple of issues in the UK with customers using leased solar, mainly due to issues surrounding mortgaging properties when customers move. Chains are broken due to issues with contracts signed with solar companies. Something around right of access for maintenance and future planning / zoning restrictions. As you can imagine, the UK is not the best country for solar endeavors, has not quite reached a tipping point, but is gaining popularity. Well, here they are absolutely out of control. I mean, it is everybody and their brothers installing solar in Hawaii. Matter of fact, that's why the prices are coming down. But at the same point, you got to be careful with the companies. And we got not a solar guy coming Saturday. We've got a kitchen and bathroom guy coming Saturday. Yes, the wife wants to do remodeling in a worse sort of way. So we'll see. Yes, you have fellas. You know how that goes, right? You just shake your head. Yes, dear. All right. We're here at the end. Thanks for the emails. Again, geeknews@gmail.com. If you have comments about the show, you can reach me at Twitter @geeknews. Of course, geeknewscentral.com is the place to go to check out all the great content our writers do. I want to thank for those of you that are up on the stream tonight for hanging out. The live stream is the live stream looks to be still rocking and rolling. And let me actually show those of you that have hung out what I'm actually doing here. Can I show this on that camera? Let me select number one, see if I can scroll down far enough so you guys can see it. Yeah, let me take the lower third off. You guys see this little red box right here? This is the live stream broadcaster. And underneath it, I have set up a Blackmagic Design SDI to HDMI converter. So I can actually monitor the stream that's going. Got cables kind of strung all over the place that I'm going to have to hide. But I'm going to come up with a little better solution, kind of hide this box back here. But basically, I can watch the stream going on live stream right there and see how it's going. But I think we're going to be testing. Heck, I'm paying $30 a month for this stupid thing. So I'm going to go ahead and start using Livestream more on a backup basis. Let's see if I can show you guys this before we leave. I know I'm running late, so if you guys want to go, you can go. But let me show you this. This is the, what's the name of this thing? This is Ultra Studio Express, and this is from Blackmagic Design. SDI in, and you can do analog in, but the main thing is it goes Thunderbolt. So I had that hooked up to my Mac Mini underneath the desk here, and what I found, and of course it's, you know, this is how the video feed comes in, video and audio comes into this right here, and what I found is that Flash Media Coder on the Mac Mini is just a piece of crap in a big, big way. So I have to make a decision here. It worked good under a trial version of Wirecast. So if I want to have three streams up, I have to look at, you know, one thing after the other. So hopefully the folks at Blackmagic Design will make some fixes and I can use it with the Flash Media Encoder. But it was just like video is chopping and it wasn't right. Under Wirecast, it was perfect. So I know if it works with Wirecast or work with Flash Media Encoder, if they choose to fix it, but I don't know if they will. I think FME on Windows, I mean, on the Mac just sucks. It doesn't work that well. So where the PC once again comes out on top. So anyway, that's it. Enough about this talk about hardware, but those of you on live stream, I hope I set it up right and it's working. And if you watch the show live tonight on live stream, drop me an email, geeknews@gmail.com. Until next time, we'll see everyone. All right, take care and thanks for being here. We'll go into replay in a few minutes. Aloha.